It's Saturday, the 6th of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Chris Humphries and Kevon Looney. Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Daryl Yeah. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Daryl Yeah, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. Not only do you get to become a sponsor of the podcast for a day, but you help the show out immensely by pushing it up the iTunes rankings and getting it out to more people. And thank you to the over 500 people who have done that so far. Got in contact with the 500th review person, Emma Sizzle. His jersey is on its way. Haven't heard back from the person who won the 400th review jersey competition. So I'm going to go with number 401, and that is Jake Belke. Jake Belke, get in contact with me. Send me an email and we'll organize for your jersey to be sent out to you. So I apologize to Ron. It's been a week. You haven't let me know. You must have listened to one episode and decided that was enough. Jake Belke, get in contact with me and we'll get a jersey organized out for you. I'm not sure. Do I remember? Did I say what my name is? It's Josh Lloyd. I'm sure you know that by now. But if you're a new listener or a new viewer, welcome. You can watch the show live on YouTube each day and, of course, available in audio form on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever good podcasts are sold. If you are watching on video, you'll see a few new additions to the set. As you can see behind me, a little bit of a decoration happening, liven up the set, just get things happening a little bit more interesting. You can see I've got the Brooklyn Nets jersey up there. It isn't the winner of the monstrous line of the night, but it does come from that team. That's my Rondae Hollis Jefferson jersey up there. Unfortunately, he isn't playing at the moment, but it's the right team. So, no more waffling.
Let's get to it.
Well, let's not do the monstrous line of the night first. Let's go into the Facebook and Instagram contest. If you're unaware, I have a Facebook page, which was facebook.com/redrockbasketball, and an Instagram page, which is @redrock_bball. And each day on there, there's a daily contest, and you're guessing totals of things. Today on Instagram, we went with DeMarcus Cousins. How many combined points and rebounds would Boogie have? The answer was 34. No one got it right. On Facebook, the contest was John Wall. How many assists and steals combined will he get? The answer is 12, and the correct answer was guessed by Drew Way. So congratulations, Drew, for guessing that correctly. Interesting that I picked DeMarcus Cousins and John Wall, and both of those guys ended up with triple-doubles today. That'll never happen again, especially not with the players that I've picked for Saturday's games. On Facebook, we're going to have the Facebook contest, how many points will Devin Booker score? On Instagram, it is how many combined blocks, steals, and rebounds for Nerlens Noel. So check those out on Instagram and Facebook and leave your comment with your guess for the answer below. The monstrous line of the night, I mentioned it already. It comes from the Brooklyn Nets. It is Joe Johnson. I never thought that I would be announcing Joe Johnson as the monstrous line of the night, but here we are. Johnson played 37 minutes in a massive win over the Kings, had 27 points, including 5 triples, 6 rebounds, 11 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 11 of 16 from the field. Joe Johnson was fantastic, and to be honest, ever since the loss of Jarrett Jack and to a lesser extent the firing of Lionel Hollins, Johnson's been incredible. He's been a top 50 player the last 2 weeks, a top 70 player the last month. I've been spouting it on for quite a while. He has to be owned. There's no doubt he has to be owned. In that last month, 13 points, 2 triples, 4 rebounds, 4.5 assists, half a steal, shooting 49 and 96 from the free throw line. Yes, the attempts are minimal, but it's still an awesome percentage. The 49%, you might say that's not realistic, but it's been a month that he's been shooting that. He was at a woeful about 36% to start the year. He's got his season-long numbers up to 40 now. Everything is clicking for him. I don't imagine it stays that high, but if he regresses down to 43, 44 and still gives you those great assist numbers, which is where a stack of his value is coming from, Johnson, he has to be owned. There's almost no way that he can't be. And you know what? He's not. He's only owned in about 65% of leagues. So you might be sitting there in a 12-team league and he's available. You might be sitting there in a 10-team league and he's available. And even then, I would have to consider it because a 10-team league top 70 guy, it's not easy to find. And don't be too skewed by his season-long numbers. Again, the change with Jarrett Jack going out is really putting his numbers, they're really boosting his numbers quite significantly. And that's what's happening at the moment for Joe Johnson. I'm going to adjust this camera a little bit here. There we go. That's better. Sorry about the delay. It was looking good before, and then something happened and it all went funny. Here we go. We're back in business. The waiver wire line of the night is another guy who probably shouldn't be qualifying for this, but with ownership under 60%, Darren Collison turns in the waiver wire line of the night. 25 minutes for Collison and scored 25 points, including two triples, had three rebounds, one assist, and two steals. He's been up and down. He's got tremendous upside if something was to happen to Rajon Rondo, but he's still a top 100 player on the season. He is a top 50 guy over the last week. The numbers are solid but not spectacular. He's giving you, over the season, four assists. That has dropped recently, so that has reduced some of his value, but you get a three, you get a steal, you get really good percentages out of a point guard especially. He's on 47% from this of the season. The last month he's giving you 49% from the field. These are big numbers for a point guard, over 80% free throws, and the upside to be a top 50, top 40 player if something was to happen to Rondo. Very hard to stash guys in the case of an injury, because there's lots of other examples like that. But he's putting up numbers in his own right. In the 26 minutes or 27 minutes he's getting over the last couple of weeks, he's ranked 86th. These are still decent numbers. They're not awesome, but they're still pretty good. And I think that Darren Collison, one, maybe not being a must-own player, is pretty damn close to it. He should be owned in most sort of formats, in most... definitely anything deeper than a 12-team league, quite obviously. But anything else, like a 12-team league, it's touch and go. It really depends, I guess, on the way, again, that your team is structured, as it goes for so many situations of ad drops and trades and all that sort of stuff. The young gun of the night.
Percentages.
Remember how I had that slight rant yesterday, maybe, on the rookie wall? It's a load of shit. It just is. Kristaps Porzingis is hitting the rookie wall. Yeah, he is. And then he goes for 17 and 10 with six blocks and three triples. It's a narrative that some people create and use it when it suits, but when it doesn't suit, it gets ignored. As I mentioned, Andrew Wiggins was red hot to end last season. How was Zach LaVine's rookie wall last year when he was actually good in the second half and terrible at the start? How was Nerlens Noel's rookie wall last year? How's Karl Anthony Towns' rookie wall looking this year? How does someone who's hitting a rookie wall go for 17 and 10 with six blocks and three triples in 38 minutes? He was just having a slump. And it's very important to understand both sides of narratives, because it gets thrown out way too often. And I'm probably rehashing the rant I had yesterday. But Porzingis had played 24 minutes. He struggled. Rookie wall. And people be, oh, rookie wall, he's going to get worse. It's going to get bad for him. Someone might throw out the ridiculous shutdown term. Oh, it's a rookie wall. He might get shut down. It's just, you need to understand both sides of it, because it's a very easy way to explain things that are happening. Oh, Porzingis, rookie wall. He's bad. Let's get rid of him. Let's trade him. And then he does that. There'll be bad games. There'll be good games. But go back and look over the history of rookies' plays, and you'll see that, some people get worse. Some people get better. It's not a trend that is definitive. And that's the point I was trying to get at. So, our boy
Porzingis
gives me another opportunity to keep playing that drop.
Porzingis.
And he puts up a fantastic fantasy line. We're all winners. The dart of the night. He is not a winner, but he has been a winner over the course of the season. So we'll give him a little bit of a pass. Zaza Pachulia of the Dallas Mavericks. 19 minutes for Zaza before he elbowed David West in the head. He got ejected. 4 points, two rebounds, two assists. Not his greatest performance. His percentages were down as well. Basically did nothing for you. But hey, Zaza's been fantastic this season. Much, much better than I think most people could have anticipated. His form of late has been a little bit disappointing. He's had drops in both of his percentages, which has dropped his ranking down. He's still giving you, over the last month, 11 rebounds a game. He gives you 2.5 assists, which from a center isn't bad. But with Zaza, he's not a shot blocker. He's averaging 0.3 blocks, which is basically what he does his entire career. The last five seasons, blocks per game, Zaza Pachulia, 0.3, 0.3, 0.2, 0.5, 0.3. That's what he does. He's going to get you assists more than average, steals more than average, big rebounds from him this year, and the scoring hasn't been great. and he got ejected in this one. Not a great performance there from Zaza on tonight, but I'm not panicking too much. But some people will drop him, especially with the reduction in his scoring over the last month, where it's down under 9 points over the last month, and the dip in percentage is down to 45 and 67. There'll be some people that drop him, but he can be he's a double-digit rebounder. You don't find many of those guys around. And in general, he's a pretty good percentage guy, so I'm not worried about this slight dip down to 67%. The last 4 years, he was at 79, 85, 76, 74. So I'm not too concerned about his free throws. He's sitting at 75 this year. Not too much to be concerned about with Zaza Pachulia. The perfect DFS lineup. Let's bring it up. There it is. At point guard, John Wall, 51.6. I mentioned he had a triple-double. Fantastic. Derek Rose, 52.8. With Jimmy Butler playing and then going down, which we're going to talk about soon. Rose is thriving without Butler. In the game that he played the other night against the Kings, Rose had a fantastic night. Here, he had a fantastic night. We're going to smash him, I reckon, for DFS tomorrow with Butler out. He really jumps up and takes a much bigger offensive role, bigger usage. He gets more assists. He handles the ball more, and it's contributing to a real rise in what Derek Rose is doing at the moment. Shooting guard, of course, Joe Johnson, 50.7. That's a fantastic outing from him. Iman Shumpert, that was a one out of the box performance, 29.1. Don't think anyone would have really had him in their lineups, except if you were just trying to put every single person into a lineup. Small forwards, Paul George, 49.8, and Evan Turner at 43.4. Turner has been playing fantastically well of late. We'll get into him a little bit later, but putting up some great numbers. At power forward, Thad Young, 42.3, really took advantage of the really disgusting Kings defense, put up some big numbers, and there's going to be some Kings news. At the moment, we're hearing that George Karl could be gone. He's not fired yet, but hey, news might break as we're doing the podcast, but we're hearing at this point that the Kings are seriously considering getting rid of George Karl, and there's a lot of blowback from the Kings with the way that Karl is handling things and the way the team's being run. From the local press guys there, I wouldn't be shocked to see Aaron Brusky. I was thinking of who's a Kings writer who I'd seen tweet out some stuff about Karl being gone. I wouldn't be surprised to see Karl gone in the next 48 hours. The other power forward, Derek Favors, 42.5, and Rudy Gobert, 42.1. Both of those guys had an awesome matchup, and they duly delivered. I reckon plenty of listeners to this podcast would have been able to put together a pretty fantastic lineup with some of the discussions we had on yesterday's podcast. That lineup there totaled 404.3 points. Some of those ones were a little bit tough to pick, but yeah, all in all, there was some pretty good value to be had across the slate, and it obviously turned out that way. All right, now before we get into the box score breakdown portion of the show, it's time for a quick break for a word from our sponsors. All right, we are back, and let's get into these games. There were a lot of them. We've got a lot of games to preview as well. So, no more delays. The first game was the Indiana Pacers and the Atlanta Hawks. Paul George with a huge line there, 31, 9, and 6 with 7 triples, and probably his first efficient scoring night in recent memory. He went 11 of 21. Obviously, his form has fallen off quite a lot from the hot November start, but really settling in as a solid second to third round player. Jordan Hill got another start with Jan Mihinmi out. Couldn't replicate the big night he had a couple of games ago. 28 minutes for Hill, 3 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists and a steal. It was Lavoie Allen, the big man, who really took off here. 13 and 14 in 30 minutes, 2 assists and a block. Allen and Hill, look, Hill was a decent short-term ad. Allen would be an okay short-term ad, but you don't know which one's going to go off on either night. I'm not running to go and pick up Lavoie Allen after this performance. He also had to deal with Miles Turner being in foul trouble, so he got the extra run here. So it feels like, yes, it was a good performance, but it's not a performance that I think is going to be highly replicable. Now, Turner only played 23 minutes because of the fouls. 12 and 7 with a steal and a block, so still really nice production. He is going to be a really good player. Georgie Hill, 35 minutes, so the minutes aren't a problem for him. 7 points, that's not good. A 3 and 8 assist, though, is pretty standard, and he is just that nice back-end point guard that just does what he needs to do, and that's fine. Monte Ellis, 11 points, also hit 3 triples, a massive rarity for Monte. 1 assist, 3 steals, 1 block, and 3 boards. Not a great shooting night, but overall a pretty decent night from Monte. And CJ Miles played 19 minutes, wasn't as ridiculously good as he was the other day, but still decent, 13 and 4 with 2 triples and a block. Really not on my radar as a long-term ad for standard leagues. Maybe short-term if you're looking for three-pointers next time the Pacers play, but really his role has been significantly reduced. Paul Millsap started this game off absolutely on fire, quieting down a bit, 24 points, 3 triples, but had 2 steals and 4 blocks in a really dominant defensive stat display anyway, and that's what Millsap can do, contribute all over the place. Also a ridiculous 10 of 14 from the field, while Al Horford went 21, 7 and 6, and both of those guys sort of going against a tough Pacers front court in terms of the defense they provide against fantasy teams. They really didn't have too much of a concern there. Kent Bazemore has been struggling. Broke out of that struggle here. 15, 1 and 8, 3 steals, 2 triples. Big night from Bazemore. It has definitely not been the norm as of late. I still think you probably have to keep holding him, but just watch for the gradual decline of Kent Bazemore. Jeff Teague, 16, 5 and 4 in 30 minutes with a steal, while Dennis Schroeder played 19 minutes and had 9 points with 7 assists. Look, 7 assists is good, but Schroeder is not worth holding on to if the trade deadline wasn't appearing. If Teague or Schroeder do not get traded at that deadline, Schroeder can be done. He is, if he's not getting 20 minutes a night, he's not producing at a massively high enough level to be owned in leagues. I am still holding him and just waiting out this trade deadline. We've got about a week of games left until we get some closure on that situation. I'm not holding him after that if no move takes place. Kyle Korver, 27 minutes, 6 points, 2 triples, 5 rebounds. People are still holding Kyle Korver in 10-team leagues. I got a tweet from someone today. It doesn't need to be done. He can be moved on from, and it could have been moved on from him probably 6 weeks ago. He just is nowhere near the same player. You could get plenty more value off the waiver wire than Korver. And at this point, holding on to him, it's not only that he's not producing, it's the opportunity cost of missing someone like Nikola Jokic or even a Marcus Smart or a Kent Bazemore, or anyone, any of these guys who have exploded out of nowhere this season. That's the cost you have in holding on to. And we know that Korver can do it, but early on it was appearing that this is just not going to be the case for him this season. And really, it'd have to be probably a 14-team league, I'd say, to keep holding on to Korver. 12-team league, it's really borderline. Not much else to really talk about. Tim Hardaway went back to 3 points in 13 minutes after a nice night against the Sixers the other day. Speaking of the Sixers, the Philadelphia 76ers took on the Washington Wizards, and they got beaten. Wasn't as big a blowout as when they played the Hawks, but still a loss, which I'm sure would suit the Sixers just nicely. Ish Smith, 32 minutes, 22, 5 and 5, 3 steals and a block. He took 25 field goal attempts. That is a lot of field goal attempts for someone who can't shoot. 11 of 25, so it wasn't a massive murdering of it. Wasn't fantastic, but hey, he's producing, and you see his rank gets really reduced by his percentages. You need to be in a situation where you're able to absorb them or punting them to really get the full value out of what Ish Smith is able to do. Isaiah Cannon played 32 minutes. He went 18, 3 and 3, hit 4 triples and had a steal. He's been playing quite well of late. He's a nice scorer. He's a really good guy at hitting 3-pointers. In the last week, Isaiah Cannon is ranked inside the top 30 because he's averaging 15.7 points, 4 triples, and 1.7 steals. That's not realistic for him to continue, but on the season, he's averaging to over 2 threes a game, and that can be really useful if you need that sort of production in that category. Not a must-own guy, but definitely someone who should be on and off rosters. Nerlens Noel, 9 points. Yeah, again, this is the thing. You look at a box score, and you look at the first column, and it's points normally, and you get 9 points. Yeah, that's not good. But then 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 4 blocks. Very productive. Nerlens Noel has really settled into being that guy who's probably going to be a top 30 player for the rest of this season. Jahlil Okafor started next to him. Foul trouble really restricted him. 21 minutes, 9 points, and 4 boards for Okafor. Really tailed off after a strong... Maybe he's hitting the rookie wall. Again, he's been injured. He's been sick. There's been a few factors. And the fact is, I just don't think he's not that good. That was my very early assessment of him before he started in the NBA. Started off pretty well, but I just don't think he's that good. Nick Stauskas played 28 minutes, 9, 4, and 3 with 3 triples for Stauskas. The minutes are there for him, but the production's not enough for me to go, yeah, let's go and grab Stauskas. And same with Jeremy Grant, who played 27 minutes here. Extra run with Okafor Limited, 9, 5, and 4, and had 2 blocks, but he's really a deeper sort of league guy. Or if he's playing 30 minutes, then we could look at him as having some interest. Poor old Bob Cove is really struggling at the moment. 19 minutes for him, 0 points on 0 of 5 shooting, 4 rebounds and 1 block. Now, I had someone tweet at me today, what do I do with Robert Covington? Do I still hold? It's not looking good. I tweeted back something like, he's still averaging 7 rebounds, 14 points and 2.8 threes over the last 2 weeks. I think that's pretty good. And then he goes out and has a stinker here. there's a couple of things to take from that. Yes, the trend of what's happening with him is not positive. It is going in a backwards direction from what we were seeing earlier on. His last two games, he's given us 21 minutes and 19 minutes. You know, 6 points combined, 10 rebounds, 2 blocks. You know, that's not good in two games. In the game before that, though, he went 12 and 13 with 2 triples, 2 steals, and a block. 2 games prior, 19 and 5 with 5 triples. The game before that, 28 and 6, 28, 25 and 8 with 6 triples. The game before that, 11 boards and 3 steals. The game before that, 11 and 5 with 3 triples and 2 blocks. The game before, you know what I'm talking about. He's had a couple of bad games, but there's a lot of psychology that goes into fantasy basketball. Basketball in general, but fantasy basketball. Bob Cub had a stinking stretch to start the season. Horrible. This guy is shit. Let's drop him. He's terrible. He has 2 bad games in a row. Oh, he's done. The sky is falling. And it might be the case. He's really struggled, like really struggled. But all you have to do is look back to the last week of January. And in the last 4 games that he played in January, he hit 14 triples in that time. He had 34 rebounds in that time. 3 blocks, 4 steals in 4 games. It's a pretty red hot stretch. So things ebb and flow. But, you know, I'm not dropping him. I'll need to see a couple more bad games like this from him before I drop. Obviously, there's a confidence issue with him, which has led to some problems earlier on in the season. But this has not been a prolonged stretch of suckitude. It's been 2 games. So and back to the psychology, someone will drop him. In one of you people listening to this league, someone in your league will drop Bob Cove. I'm guaranteed. If you're in one of those leagues, send me a tweet at redrock_bball. Did someone in your league drop Rob Covington? And let me know. Because it will happen. And these are the things you need to be on an eye out, have an eye out for and scouring things for. Or send a really low ball trade offer. Send a terrible, your worst player for Bob Covington. See if you can get him back. It's really important to understand the psychology that goes into some of these people's thinking. That your past experiences and... It goes with guys that I've spoken about before, how people are very quick to think a guy's a good player and they overvalue guys quickly. There's a psychology to it. I probably went on for a bit too long on that part, but I think you're getting my point. Anyway, and the person who tweeted me, I'm not having a go at you. I'm just trying to highlight the things that do happen and the way that you can get swept up in the immediacy of things. And yes, it might be trending downwards, but it doesn't mean I'm dropping him unless there's someone just super ridiculous on your waiver wire. Then I'd have a look at it. But really, it's 2 bad games. Johnny Wall, the first of the NBA players to have a triple-double in Friday's games. 18, 13, and 10. 3 triples, 2 steals, 1 block. So it wasn't just a triple-double. It was a very well-rounded performance. And look what happens when Marcin Gortat plays. 34 minutes for Gortat, 21 and 13 with 3 assists and a block. Shockingly enough, the Wizards won the game. Just play this guy 30-plus minutes. You don't have another center who is good. I know Randy Whitman is a bit of a dipshit, but play him more than 26 minutes. It would be and shockingly, he had 5 fouls. Well done, Whitman. Play him the extra minutes. Really frustrating. Brad Beal moved back into the starting lineup. He played 32 minutes. Super encouraging. 22 points with 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. Red-hot shooting, 10 of 16 as well. Beal's not going to be on a waiver wire, but Beal owners will be pretty happy with this. They do have a back-to-back, so he might not play in that one, but it's encouraging that he played the 32 minutes and the scoring was right there for him. He's not going to go back to 38 minutes he was getting at the start of the season. Just forget about that. That's not happening. But yeah, 32 minutes, I thought he might be stuck at 28 minutes for a big stretch. 32 minutes is pretty good, and if you can get close to that on most nights, you're going to get really nice value for Brad Beal. Jared Dudley played 34 minutes. Nene was out of this one, so he got extra run. Fantastic line from Dudley. 13, 4, and 4. A steal, a block, and 2 triples on 5 of 7 shooting. What do you do with Dudley? Is he a 12-team league guy? Well, if Nene's going to miss time, which his name's Nene, we know that he's going to miss time. We know that this injury is going to occur. Dudley is easily a top 100 player over in, if you look at the Basketball Monster splits, the last week, he's a top 70 player. The last 2 weeks, he's a top 90 player. The last month, he's a top 75. The last 2 months, he's a top 75. The last 3 months, he's a top 95. All of those, and on the season, he's exactly at number 100. Again, you look at his scoring over the last 2 months, 9.9 points. That's not good. That's not very good. but 1.6 triples, 4 rebounds, 1.2 steals, 50% as a guy that's hitting you over 1.5 threes is impressive. And that's where a lot of his value comes from. Throw in the fact that he's a low turnover guy if you're in a 9-cat league, and you know my thoughts on turnovers. Dudley has to be considered, definitely, especially if Nene remains out for an extended period of time, which I'd be shocked if he didn't. Otto Porter was limited back to 25 minutes, so up, down is the way it's running with Porter. 5-4 with a triple one, so yeah, not great production, but not horrible. Really don't like the fact that this hip could still be bothering him. It is a problem that's bothered him for the last three seasons. Not a good sign at all. Garrett Temple went back to the bench. He still got 30 minutes with Porter being limited. 8 points and an assist for Temple, and that's basically who he is. The next game up is the Miami Heat and the Charlotte Hornets. Hassan Whiteside didn't get back into the starting lineup, but he played starters minutes, so it doesn't matter. 27 minutes for him. He had the next triple-double of the day. 10 points, 10 rebounds, 10 blocks. That is as, I'm going to say, basic a triple-double as you can get, because he had no threes, no assists, no steals, just 10, 10, and 10. But the 10 blocks is obviously fantastic. It is superb. He also went 2 of 3 from the line, which is great, and he hit 4 of 8 from the field. So a good night from Hassan Whiteside. I'm sure his owners are great to have the NBA's leading shot blocker back, because you know, 10 blocks is 10 blocks. That's production that you would get from, I don't know, a week's worth of like 3 or 4 other players. It's big, big production. And you got it in one game. It's a game changer. Goran Dragic looked really good. 32 minutes for Dragic, 12, 8, and 9 with 2 steals on 5 of 10 shooting. Slowly, just getting that, just that little bit better. And I think part of that comes from lowered expectations as well. At the start of the season, he was dreadful. Like, what is this? This is crap. I drafted him at pick 60 or whatever. He's just looking slightly better. And it is, a bit of it, it comes back to lowered expectations. The scoring is way, way down. He's only at 12 points a game. But he's giving you nice 5-plus assists a game, around a steal, really good percentage-wise, which he was struggling massively with at the start of the season. His last month, he's giving you 48%. Yeah, it's still not great numbers, and you look at his overall rank, and it's not superb, but he's doing enough, and he has to be owned in 12-team leagues. Chris Bosh, 20-6 in 35 minutes, not a bad night there, and Dwayne Wade, 22-3-5 with 2 steals, really efficient from Wade as well. But one of the main guys I want to talk about in Miami, Justice Winslow. I would bang on about it at the start of the season a lot, the guy who's doing the least with the most. It's not quite the case anymore. 33 minutes for Winslow, 8 points. 10 boards, 2 assists, and 2 steals. Justice Winslow is ranked inside the top 55 for the last 2 weeks. And again, it's not because of his scoring, because he's only averaging 8.6 points. It's because he's grabbing 7.6 boards, 1.5 steals, half a block. He's also shooting 64% from the field, which is not something that's going to continue. He hasn't missed a free throw in the last month, which is obviously fantastic also. Expect the field goal percentage to come back down. But that's not going to affect his steal rate. It's not going to affect his rebounding, which is way up as well. You're getting really good rebounding numbers from a small forward. You know, his last 4 games is giving you 8.3 boards, 1.5 steals. That's where his value comes from. It's not from the massive points. It's because they're not. They're 8 points a game over the last week. And some of it is inflated due to the field goal percentage. So I do have him stashed in our Red Rock Roto League, which I think is 16 teams. But reduced roster, so it equals out to about 160, 170 players. He's sitting on my bench there. In a 12-team weekly league, I'd be okay stashing him and just seeing what happens, because his role's not going anywhere. He's playing 30-plus minutes, and if he continues to shoot at, say, 46, 47%, he's going to be able to retain value there and get you those rebounds and get you those steals, and he's looking better and better and getting more involved offensively, which is good news, obviously. Amari Stoudemire started 16 minutes, 7-5 with a couple of blocks. His run is done, but he's going to remain in the rotation. I'd be pretty sure there'll be on and off days for him, though, given his age and frailty. On the Hornets, Nick Batum, 39 minutes, 21-6-7, 4 triples and 3 blocks. This is the Nick Batum that I love. He has been struggling, and again, a few weeks ago, had people saying, "Oh, is it? I need to drop Nick Batum. Is it time to drop Nick Batum?" This is why you don't drop Nick Batum. It's why you need a little bit more patience in fantasy leagues sometimes. This is a big performance from Nick Batum. Marvin Williams is playing out of his brain. I can't understand what's happening with him. 12 of 17 shooting for 27 points, 2 threes, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists with a block for Marvin Williams. He was reduced in the last game down to 24 minutes, but back up to 32 here. He should still be owned. Well, Kemba Walker played, obviously, no knee issue. 36 minutes, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and 4 triples. A good night from him. The guy who lost out on this one was Jeremy Lin. He went down to 16 minutes with everyone healthy bar Al Jefferson. 6 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists. That's probably the low end for Jeremy Lin because, you know, frankly, Jeremy Lamb doesn't need to play 9 minutes. PJ Harrison doesn't need 13 minutes. Lin could get a few extra of those, but I think his place in 12-team leagues is really on the border now. And if there's a hot guy out there that you want, I'd be okay with dropping Lin for him. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, 30 minutes, 9 points, 3 rebounds, and a block. Not the greatest performance from him, but still someone that's worth persisting with. And the big man situation, Cody Zeller got 25 minutes, 6 and 8 with a steal and a block, while Spencer Hawes played 23 and went 2 and 6 with 2 blocks. Hawes's relevance, if you did own him in a 12-team league, is done. Zeller is not necessarily a must-add guy. He was obviously awesome before he went out with that shoulder problem, so I'm okay with looking at him, but hasn't recaptured that form since returning to the lineup, and Frank Kaminsky's role has dropped to 16 minutes for Frank, 0 points with 3 rebounds and 3 assists. The Los Angeles Clippers and the Orlando Magic, easy win for the Clippers. Chris Paul, 21, 4 and 6, 4 steals and a 3, and that just feels like it's stock standard for him now. Same with DeAndre Jordan going 12 and 18 with a steal and 3 blocks. That is just what you expect from them. Jamal Crawford turning it up. He was terrible to start the season, but you know, with the absence of Blake Griffin, he's getting some extra run and some extra shots. 20 points here, 3 steals and a block. Not quite a 12-team league guy, but not out of place as a player if you need some points and threes. JJ Redick, 20 points as well, 4 triples with 3 rebounds in 27 minutes. Now, not a bad outing from him. We also had a pretty good Lance Stephenson night. Now, Lance Stephenson had some sort of ridiculous quote saying that he doesn't think anyone in the league can guard him. Yeah, no worries, Lance. That's why you've been potentially the worst player in the league over the last 2 seasons. He played 19 minutes here, had 13 points, hitting all 6 of his field goals, and had 3 assists, but do not get excited about that. Wes Johnson, my man. Another guy, the low points distract from his numbers. 27 minutes for Johnson, 5 points, but 4 blocks, a steal and a 3 with 5 rebounds. These are great numbers. And this is what Wes Johnson can do. Don't add him if you're severely lacking in points because you're not going to get that off him. In the last month, he's averaging 8.4, but what he is averaging is 1.9 triples, 1.7 steals, 0.9 blocks, 4 rebounds. That's where he's helping you. Yeah, the percentages are terrible. 38 and 55 look terrible. The scoring's bad, but triples, steals, and blocks, the hardest categories to get, the low volume categories, he provides them in big numbers, and that means he's a top 80 player over the last month, despite all those other flaws in his game. He's also an extremely low turnovers guy as well, so he's not fitting every team, but 12-team leaguers do need to look to see if he fits what they're doing. Paul Pierce started, 12 points in 20 minutes with 2 triples. He's not a guy that I'm too concerned with in 12-team leagues. And Luke Marmute started and played 16 minutes. And is there a worse 3 and 4 combination in the league than the Clippers with Marmute and Pierce? It just is brutally bad. Onto the Magic. Vic Oladipo, 36 minutes, 18, 3 and 3 with a triple and a steal. That's great. He's getting a huge amount of minutes at the moment. Really enjoying that. And Evan Fournier went back to big run here. 32 minutes, 16, 6 and 3 with 2 triples and a steal. The way it had been playing out recently is that Skiles had been playing Fournier like 18 minutes, 19 minutes, 20 minutes, and that meant that he probably wasn't worth looking at. Obviously, 32 minutes is. If I dropped him, I'm not rushing to add him because the situation is obviously going to be volatile. It's going to be him or it's going to be Mario Hezonja. Now, Hezonja had 22 minutes here for 9 and 5, but he'd played above Fournier in the last 2 to 3 games. That's not a recipe for great fantasy value. Nick Vucevic, 29 minutes, 13, 9, and 4 with a couple of steals. A decent night from him. And Toby Harris had 13 and 8 in 28 minutes. Not the greatest Toby Harris performance. He did have an issue with his eye. He had to get stitches in his eye, I believe. Now, speaking of not great efforts, Aaron Gordon, 29 minutes for 6 points with 3 rebounds, a steal, and a block. He's had a couple of big games. He's had a couple of stinkers as well. Someone will drop him. I'll almost guarantee you that he will be dropped in leagues as well. Let me know your thoughts if you want to go and add him. I still think he's got a lot of potential, but he doesn't have a very long leash to me because he's never produced before. He's had a couple of good games, and he's just, I don't know. Look, the last 2 weeks, he's giving you 10 points, 9.4 rebounds. I love the 9.4 rebounds. I don't like anything else than what he's doing in those last 2 weeks. Half a 3, 1.7 assists, 0.4 steals, 0.7 blocks, 42 and 59. These are terrible numbers. I am holding, and I do own him in a couple of leagues. I want to give it a couple more weeks to see what happens, but his leash is not all that long. So maybe dropping him is not the worst idea. Lord Alfred Payton was also terrible. 30 minutes for him, 6-1 and 3 in those 30 minutes with his usual very, very bad shooting numbers. What do you do with him? He's a guy I'd be more likely to hang on to than Payton, but he has been brutal this season. Really, really bad. His assist numbers are way down. He's really struggling under Scott Skiles. He doesn't do enough. He is not a guy at the moment who is a must-own player. He might be, depending on your format and your team. I know I own him in a couple of leagues. I own him in a punt free throw league, and I own him in a real salary cap league because of his salary. But he has been brutally bad. The last 2 weeks, he's only giving you 3.6 assists a game in 28 minutes, and that's where his value comes from. His steals are way down as well. He was a guy that was literally a two steals a game threat, and I think he averaged two steals a game post All-Star break last season and about 8 or 9 assists. The percentages are terrible. He is really struggling. He is no longer, to me, a must-own player. As weird as it sounds, he just cannot get anything happening at all. The Memphis Grizzlies and the New York Knicks. Zach Randolph started 29 minutes for Randolph, 10-4. He's borderline. Really, this game is just yuck when you look at it from a fantasy point of view. Matt Barnes had 12-7 with 2 triples of steal and a block. That's nice, but in 21 minutes off the bench, is that replicable? Probably not. He's a borderline 12-team league guy. And Jeffrey Green, he has to be owned. 29 minutes for Green, 16-5-2 with a steal. We know it's going to drop off, but it's been a week and a bit. Let's just keep riding with it. Marc Gasol, 10-7, not his best night. Mike Conley, 8-2-9. Again, not his best night, but he did have 9 assists to 1 turnover. So if you own Mike Conley in an assist to turnover league, you must be loving the contribution he's giving. His numbers would rise significantly. Courtney Lee had 3 points in 22 minutes. Tony Allen had 7 in 19 minutes. This game was not ideal in looking at any sort of fantasy value from these guys. On the Knicks, Jose Calderon retained his starting job. He played 35 minutes here. So that's why I was mentioning yesterday, if you own Jose Calderon, he played 12 minutes in his first game back. Don't panic, because he might play big minutes in the next one. It's exactly what happened. 18-8-5 with 3 triples and a steal. But with Mallow out, Langston Galloway also started, and he was bad. 4-3-3 on 2 of 10 shooting. Now, which is it? Is it Mallow coming back? Does that mean that Galloway goes to the bench? Does Calderon go to the bench? Does Galloway go to the bench and play 30 minutes and Calderon plays limited minutes? We still don't know yet, but it's why it was a good idea to hold on to Calderon, because we need to see what happens. Obviously, we're a little bit concerned about Mallow's knee. He's still having pain in that knee. It's the surgically repaired knee. I don't want to hear the term shutdown. It's another one of those terms that pisses me off amazingly. I reckon it's one of those things that gets talked about, that and trade rumors that get talked about ad nauseum, that just don't happen. You might have 1% of the trade rumors that get spoken about that occur, and then 1% of this guy's a shutdown candidate that occur. It just doesn't happen. Yeah, Mallow got shut down last year. We could see it coming for about a month. It was very obvious because they said he is not going to play. It was pretty straightforward. But players don't get shut down unless it's the last week or two of the season. And there's a real difference between, and I think people seem to think that a shutdown candidate is, we're bad, don't play. That's not how it works. It's like, you've got an injury, we're not great, it's going to keep you out for 5 weeks or 4 weeks. The season's got 4.5 weeks left. Don't bother. But last season we saw it. I can't remember who the player was, but a guy who would literally come back for a team out of the playoffs and play the last 2 games. Why? Why bother? It happens. The shutdowns, rookie walls, trade rumors, contract year, they're great narratives. These don't happen as much as what people make them out to be. I'm not worried about Mallow shutting it down at this point. Look, his injury could get worse and it could necessitate it, but you just don't get, oh, we're not making the playoffs. Well, that's it, boys. I'm off. I'm off to Bahamas. I will see you guys in 6 months. I am shutting it down. Good luck with the rest of the season. Good luck with March and April. Peace. I'll be back. I'll see you guys back in August, maybe. No, I'll see you in September. Good knowing you. That's not what happens. So don't get too, get lots of questions. Oh, is he a shutdown candidate? Is he going to get shut down? No. Most of these guys don't get shut down. It just doesn't happen. So, hey, maybe I'll come back and have to eat my words. I doubt it, though. Robin Lopez, another big minutes game. Great. He deserves big minutes. 9-10. Not the peripheral stats for Lopez, but still, production's fantastic. And Aaron Aflalo, this was a bad Aaron Aflalo game. 4 of 15 from the field. 14 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 triples. This is the bad side of owning Aaron Aflalo. The Boston Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Huge win for the Celtics. Avery Bradley getting the buzzer-beating winner. But I want to start talking about another Celtics wing, Evan Turner. 32 minutes for Turner, 19 and 12, 6 assists and 1 block. I've talked about him a lot over the last 2 weeks. I don't think you can really avoid owning him at the moment. His last 2 weeks, he's a top 50 guy. 14, 5.5, 5.5, 1.5 steals, half a block on 55 and 89. You cannot ignore that. He used to be a bad free throw shooter. But his last 4 seasons, 74, 81, 75, and he's at 85 this year. He's got his field goal percentage up to 45. He's always been a good assist man. He's not going to hit you any threes, but he's going to give you good rebounds, good assists. He can get you a steal a game, and he's producing a little bit more scoring-wise. He's taking on a bigger role at the moment. It may die off, no doubt. But he's playing a role, and he's playing it well, and he's producing solidly over the last couple of weeks. You've got to look at Evan Turner. Tyler Zeller is clearly back into the rotation now, much to the chagrin of Kelly Olynyk, Amir Johnson, and Jared Sullinger owners. Just another big man to get 20 minutes a game from Brad Stevens, and that is going to complicate things. Olynyk, he played 12 minutes for 2 points and a steal. I reckon you can move on from him in 12-team leagues. Sullinger played 24 minutes, went 12-7-3 with a steal and 3 blocks. That's obviously appealing, so probably hold there. Amir Johnson played 14 minutes as a starter. Foul trouble limited him, yes. 4 fouls in that time, 6-6. He is an okay 12-team league guy, but not a must-own guy. And then you've got Jonas Jerebko playing 13 minutes. It is a complete mess in this situation. We know that's going to be the case. And it continues to be it. The Celtics have too many good players and no great players in the front court. Marcus Smart, only 21 minutes, 8 points, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a 3. So still not a bad performance. And Avery Bradley, 14 and 3, and he hit 4 triples, while Isaiah Thomas went 22, 4 and 4 on a brutal shooting night, 5 of 19, but hit all 11 of his free throws, which is obviously a fantastic performance there. And Jay Crowder stunk too. 1 of 9 for Crowder, had 7 boards and a 3 in 32 minutes. Not his greatest night. His form has declined a little bit recently. On the Cavs, Iman Shumpert got 35 minutes with Matthew Dellavedova out. 4 and 8, had 3 assists, 5 steals, a block, and a 3. A really nice all-round performance, but that does not mean that I need to go and add him in standard leagues. J.R. Smith pissed about not getting invited into the 3-point contest. Whatever. 20 points for Smith, 5 triples, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 block. He should be owned. And LeBron went 37 and 4 with 2 steals and a block, and he had 9 of 23 shooting. He also missed all 5 of his 3-point attempts, and he had some sort of quote after the game that he doesn't care about what his percentage is from 3. You might want to look at it, LeBron, because if you're going to shoot 20% from 3, or if you're going to miss all of your shots, you might want to reassess what you're doing, especially when you've got guys like Kyrie and J.R. Smith on your team, and Kevin Love, who were amongst the best 3-point shooters in the game. Look, you might want to just not take them, because you're really not shooting them very well. Anyway, Kyrie, 19, 3, and 6, which is about as good as you could expect for a guy playing against the Celtics defense. It's not a great night, but it's not a terrible night. And Tristan Thompson, a very Tristan Thompson line, 10 rebounds with 3 points, a steal, and 2 blocks. Kevin Love lasted 22 minutes before leaving with a bruised thigh. He doesn't think it's too serious, so that's great. 10, 5, and 2 for Love with 2 triples and a block. He might miss some time. It would mean a little bit of extra offense for Thompson, maybe some more rebounds. I think we'd obviously see some more Mozgov, as Mozgov would play the 5 and Thompson could play some of the 4. LeBron would play a little bit more of the 4, and we might see some more Richard Jefferson, but no one who's an ad here, because it's not going to be a long-term situation. Dellavedova out, Mo Williams gets 6 minutes. He's just not any part of what Ty Lue wants to do with this team. So if you're still holding Mo Williams in even a 16-team league, I don't even think you need to continue to do that. The Sacramento Kings and the Brooklyn Nets. Boogie Cousins had the 3rd triple-double of the night, 24, 10, and 10, 4 triples for Boogie, 2 steals. He went 9 of 18 from the field, just continues to do remarkable things. Can't wait to see him in the skills challenge. Rajon Rondo, 35 minutes, 15 points, 15 assists, 3 steals. That's 15 points is pretty nice from Rondo. And Willie Cauley-Stein, really baffling. It's hard to get a handle on this guy. He played like 5 or 6 games at 30 minutes, and then about 3 or 4 at 19 minutes. Back to 29 here, 16 and 6 with a steal and a block. Maybe if George Karl goes, we'll get some clarification on what his role is and give him a more consistent role, because he can do things. fantasy-wise. He could be a steal, a one-and-a-half blocks guy with a high field goal percentage. Guy, he's shooting 60% on the season and can be a decent rebounder. He's not going to give you any assists, he's not going to score, and he's going to be a below-average free-throw shooter. But he can do enough that he can be owned in 12-team leagues. But with a fluctuating role, he's not a must-own at this point. Is it going to be 19 minutes? Is it going to be 30 minutes? At this point, we just got no idea. Apparently, Marco Bellinelli is going to be starting at least until the end of the All-Star break. I hate when coaches give timelines like that. It really pisses me off. 35 minutes for Bellinelli, 13 points with 2 steals. He's a back-end 12-team league guy, while Ben McLemore obviously has no appeal playing just 12 minutes here. Rudy Gay lasted just 4 minutes with an ankle sprain. Obviously, if he's going to be out, we're going to see more from Darren Collison, which we saw here. We're going to see more from Omri Caspi, who played 28 minutes, going 7-4 with 3 steals. So Caspi might be a nice short-term add for this team. But again, with the coaching situation in flux, we really don't know what's going to happen, but Caspi would be the guy that I'm looking at. On to the Nets. They had some big performances from numerous players. Bojan Bogdanović got red hot, hit 7 triples in his 27 minutes, 23-4-1 on 8 of 10 shooting. He hasn't been really well liked recently, barely seeing the rotation behind guys like Wayne Ellington. So I don't need to read too much into this. He's just a guy to wait and see on at the moment. And Thad Young, 14-14-7 with 2 steals. Big night from Thad, while Brook Lopez went 26-12 with 3 assists and a block as well. So all these guys really getting in on things. 31 minutes for Don Sloan. That's 2 games in a row of 30-plus minutes. 17-4 with 4 triples. He's still not a must-own player, but you know, he's definitely getting the minutes over Shane Larkin, which really throws me off because Larkin, 2-3 games ago, played 27 minutes to Sloan's like 20, had 14 assists, had a massive game, and the next 2 games, Sloan's gone for 35 and 31 minutes. It's very up in the air, but Sloan is getting, say, 67 to 70% of the time more minutes and producing in that time. He's the guy that you look to own. Doesn't strike me as a must-own player. Now, Larkin only the 17 minutes here, 3 points with 2 assists and a steal, while Wayne Ellington just continued his okay sort of season. Oh, that's the kindest way that I can put it. 26 minutes, 10 points, 1-3, 2 rebounds and 3 assists on 2 of 10 shooting. He's not really a standard league sort of guy, I don't think. Can't wait to have Rondae Hollis-Jefferson back for this team. Obviously, I've got his jersey up there. Can't wait for him to be back. The next game, the Chicago Bulls and the Denver Nuggets. Jimmy Butler, 19 points in 18 minutes, 2 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals. He was back from that knee tendonitis, only to go down with a knee injury. Now, the injury looked scary as shit. He landed on it. It looked bad. He was carted off the court. He took his free throws and then had to go off. It did not look great at all. He came back out after his x-ray and had ice on his knee and was sitting there and the Bulls have said that it's a knee sprain. Now, due maybe to a hyperextended knee. Now, we don't know the severity of it yet. They're saying positive things. Derek Rose also said that Jimmy Butler said he heard a pop. Clearly, that's not good. A knee sprain is a tear in your knee tendon. Or knee ligament. Sorry. That's what a sprain is. It's a tear in a ligament. It's not a completely... Look, he didn't tear his ACL completely. He didn't blow it out. They've said that. The knee is intact is, I think, the quote that Hoiberg used. So that means that the ACL has not been ripped in half. But there is a tear in one of his knee ligaments. It is not probably all the way through, but he has to get an MRI. This is not looking ideal. He would definitely miss at least one game. I would be shocked if he didn't miss at least until the end of the All-Star break. Just comes one day after me having this talk about Jimmy Butler being an Iron Man. He misses a lot of games. Yes, he plays a lot of minutes, but he misses a lot of games. I don't know if there's anything to do with him having sore knee and then coming in and injuring his knee. I don't know that. But not a good situation. If he happens to miss extended time, Etuan Moore had already been getting minutes, but we saw the last game that Butler missed against Sacramento. Moore put up big numbers. He'd be the guy that I'd be interested in. If Derrick Rose is available, he might be. He absolutely has to be owned. He already had to be owned anyway. But in the 2 games, or the 1.5 games without Butler, he's been fantastic. He had 30 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, and a steal in this one. Went 13 of 27 from the field. Thrives without Butler. Puts up big, big numbers. Handles the ball more. Gets more distribution, more playmaking, more assisting, more scoring. Everything has to be owned with he has to be owned anyway, but if Butler misses time, there's no doubt. Now, the Itwan Moore thing, Mike Dunleavy is supposedly returning on Saturday. He's going to take a while to get back integrated, but he might take some minutes away from Moore. Now, if Butler is out, maybe then the minutes that Moore loses from the small forward spot, he gains them at shooting guard. That's a possibility as well. But just remember, there is another wing that's being added into the mix. That could mean goodbye Tony Snell, who played 19 minutes for 2 points here because he is really bad. But Dunleavy is going to be reintegrated into this lineup in the next game. Taj Gibson with no Pau Gasol, 18 and 7 in 36 minutes and 3 blocks. And what about Bobby Portis? 27 minutes for Bobby, 8 and 7 with 2 steals. I know I said that like I was excited, but he's just not good yet. That's just what he is. He was a really solid play in DFS tonight, and that's not a bad line for his minimum salary. Pau Gasol is out with that hand sprain. That's not a long-term thing. Gasol will be back very shortly. There's no reason for Portis to be owned in 10-team leagues. There's no reason for Portis to be owned in 12-team leagues. There's really, really marginal reason for him to be owned in 14-team leagues. He's just not good at the moment. And this is nothing against him, and you know that I love his potential. He just isn't good. His rankings for the last 2 weeks, he's ranked 279th. It's not good. It's not 14-team league good. It's not 16-team league good. It's 30-team good. That's where it's at. He's just not getting it done. Even his last week, he's averaged 22 minutes, 8 and 5.5. That ranks him 245th. He's just not good. He had a chance here with Gasol out. They started Cameron Bairstow instead. Porter's got the majority of the minutes, but he's just not good. I can't say that any more times. Doug McDermott, 15 and 2 with 3 triples in 25 minutes. He's going to have his role slightly reduced when Dunleavy returns as well. And Aaron Brooks had 4 assists and 2 blocks. That's odd in his 18 minutes at the point guard spot. Onto the Denver Nuggets. Big, big win from them. They were down massively and had a roaring comeback in the fourth quarter. I think they outscored the Bulls 40 to 19 or something. Something ridiculous. Fueled by Danilo Gallinari, who was crazy good. 33 points with a triple, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. 7 of 12 from the field and hit all 18 of his free throws. He's a guy that you look at and go, oh yeah, look, he's a scorer, but what else does he do? And that's a fair criticism on what he does. He's a 20-point guy on the year, 1.6 triples. You're happy with that? But what he then, like 5.5 rebounds, that's all right. 2.5 assists, it's all right. 0.7 steals, whatever, below average. 0.4 blocks, below average. 42% from the field, below average. 88% from the free throw line and 8 attempts. Massive, like massive. His last 2 weeks, 88% on 10.5 attempts, ludicrously big. He is a top 40 player this season. He's having the best season of his career. He's taken on board this alpha role in Denver, and he's doing it. So yes, you can look at some lacks in other categories, but if you drafted around them and you know what Danilo Gallinari is, he's a scorer, he's going to hit threes, he gives you nice rebounds, and he's a great free throw shooter. But he's taken his free throws up from 3.2 last year to 8.1. And we saw it in Eurobasket. He was just getting to the line at will. And he said, I'm going to take it into the season. I'm going to be more aggressive. I'm going to get to the line. He obviously wasn't talking shit because he's doing it at a much improved rate. It's increased his scoring significantly and his fantasy value has gone up massively. Nikola Jokic, he fouled out. He played 26 minutes, 14 and 12, 2 threes, 3 assists, 2 blocks. I'm sure he's owned by now. He has to be owned. He's really, really good. Emmanuel Mudiay played 39 minutes, brutalized your percentages, going 8 of 18 and then 5 of 11 from the free throw line, but 22 points, 5 assists, 2 steals and 2 blocks with a 3. It's great. It's a great DFS line. It's a great points league line. It's a great head-to-head line if you're punting the percentages. He has a place, but it's just not for everybody. Will Barton, back to 30 minutes here, 18 and 5 with 2 triples and a block. He's very up and down. He's obviously regressed somewhat, but he still probably has to be owned. I'm just always watching that situation. No Jameer Nelson. He's been out quite a while with that wrist problem. So Randy Foy played 23 backup minutes, 6 points with 6 assists and 2 steals. We leave him as a backup only. And Gary Harris played 35 minutes, 6 and 6 with an assist. Not his greatest night. I was going on about him yesterday. Not the greatest performance from him. Ken Faried, who was awesome down the stretch for the Nuggets in that big comeback. He had 11 and 11 in 26 minutes. And JJ Kelly had a great tweet today that Ken Faried is averaging less minutes this season under Mike Malone than he was under Brian Shaw last year. And we lambasted Shaw for his minutes. I lambasted Shaw for a whole truckload of stuff. Kenneth Freed's minutes was one of them, but not one of the main things. It was more his inconsistency with guys like Yusuf Nurkic. But Freed is just not a guy. He's just not a good player. He is an okay player in spurts. To me, he's not. I'll tell you who he is. No, I don't want to give it to him. He's very Tristan Thompson-ish. I think that's the sort of level of player he is. He's not a Team USA guy. That was weird. He played well there as well, but he's just not a good player. Anyway, Yusuf Nurkic, he's not getting a big role anytime this season. It feels like 12 minutes, 2.6 boards and 2 blocks. His per 36 numbers are still really impressive, and I still can't wait to see what he does. But Nikola Jokic had jumped well ahead of him this season. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Utah Jazz, Chris Middleton, decent night, 18-6 with 3 steals, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, 14-6 with a 1-1. The Jazz were always going to shut this team down, and they did that beautifully, allowing them to score just 81 points. Jabari Parker was brutal, 2 points with 4 rebounds and a block. Jared Bayless was probably the best shooter on the team. He hit 5 of 6 triples for 15 points with 2 assists and a steal in 25 minutes. Definitely a 14-team league guy, and worth looking at in 12-team leagues if you need some threes and you need some assists, because we know that Jason Kidd is going to stuff around with these minutes. Michael Carter-Williams only got 29 minutes here, 10-6-4 with 3 steals and a block, and this is going to be the case. And it feels like there's going to be some sort of shake-up happening in Milwaukee. Trade rumors coming out of the place. Poor form. Jason Kidd, just a massive cock. He doesn't have one. He is one with some of the things he does. He grates teams really the wrong way. I think some changes are going to be happening here. Greg Monroe, 14-9 with a steal and a block. Decent night from him, especially going up against Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors. OJ Mayo looks like he's going to be ready to return soon, so that's going to take some of the minutes maybe from Bayless, but I think that'll force Rashard Vaughn out of the rotation, and the 8 minutes that Tyler Ennis got here is probably not something we're going to see too often. On the Jazz, Gobert was great. 15-8, 5 steals and 3 blocks, while his partner in crime, Derek Favors, was enormous as well. 11-15 with 2 steals and 5 blocks. So they combined for 26-23, 7 steals and 8 blocks. Incredible. Favors is obviously back. The back injury, not a concern anymore. And they've got a big four here in Utah at the moment. Gordy Haywood, 18-5 with 3 triples. And Rod Hood bounced back after a stinker. Played 41 minutes, went 23-3, 3 triples, 2 steals and an assist. I really like Hood. He obviously has to be owned. Hale Neto played 33 minutes because Trey Burke had a sore tummy. So Trey Burke had to sit this one out. He played 3 minutes, Burke, and Neto played 33. 8-3-4 for Neto. He's playing a lot better. He's getting more minutes. It's not translating into great fantasy numbers just yet, but it might. He's looking a little bit better. 14-team leagues want to pay some attention to Neto. Probably not a must-grab guy there, but he's looking a bit better. Trevor Booker, Trey Lyles, Chris Johnson, all these guys are limited in their production. And Joe Ingles had 3 steals in his 16 minutes. Not a bad night from him, but he's not really creeping into standard league consideration at this point. The San Antonio Spurs and the Dallas Mavericks played the final game of the evening. And shockingly enough, the Spurs smashed them. So when we look at the box score, there is zero that we can gain from looking at this, because minutes were spread all over the place. Oh, look at LaMarcus Aldridge and go 14-10 with 2 steals and 2 blocks is really nice. But yeah, Kyle Anderson played 23 minutes. John Simmons played 23 minutes. There's nothing positive to gain from looking at this box score and thinking, oh, I'm going to make a move on these Spurs guys. It's not happening. You can go and look at the Dallas one and think the same thing. Nobody played big minutes. This game was basically a write-off from a fantasy point of view. Yeah, Charlie Villanueva led the team in scoring, along with Justin Anderson, who's starting to look a lot better now, by the way. He was a guy that was super high on at the start of this. Shockingly enough, he's not hitting the rookie wall. He's looking better as the season goes on. 13 points in 18 minutes for him with 2 triples. But this is just, nothing's actionable in this game. We did see Salah Mejri return to action, scoring 3 points with 3 boards in 14 minutes. He'd been out with a knee problem. That is it. That is the game's done. Before we have a quick break, just want to talk a little bit about what's going to be happening over the All-Star break. Going to have a few podcasts. One podcast I'm going to do, we're going to do trades. Now, we're going to do real-life trades, and I want, real-life, what's your suggestion? What trades do you think? So I want user-submitted real-life trades, which you can do via email, and you can do via Twitter or via the Facebook page. Real life suggested trades, and we'll go over them on the show. Not fantasy related, real life stuff. That's going to be a podcast. We're going to do a trade sort of preview, trade guesswork, whatever. real-life trades that might happen. There was, I know Matt Moore on Twitter at HP Basketball had a great trade today between the Clippers, the Cavs, and the Hawks involving Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Paul Millsap, Al Horford, Kevin Love, and Tristan Thompson, and his comments were exploded. And what it showed was, when I was reading through that, that people do not think that Al Horford and Paul Millsap are good, and people are wrong. So I want real-life trades to be sent through. That's a podcast we're going to do. Myself, Matt Smith, and Kyle McEwen are looking to do a Dynasty-only podcast. We're going to do that. Still working out exactly what else I'm going to do, but at this stage, I'm looking to, and I might have it as a separate podcast, I might have it as a as cut into another podcast, but I'm very, very close to getting an NBA player onto this podcast, an active NBA player. I don't want to say who it is just yet, and I don't want to confirm it just yet, but really, really close to being able to get an NBA player on in the next week, which is going to be fantastic. I can't wait if that does happen. So that is something also to look forward to over the All-Star break. Plus, I'm happy to take suggestions for podcasts from you guys or segments as we do shows over the break. Now, it is time for me to take a break. I'm going to have some water. We're going to be back, and we're going to look at the DFS action for Saturday. I saw you. Shit, just about one day's games. We've still got the preview to go, so I do apologize for the length of this podcast. But if you aren't listening to it live, don't forget you can speed up the speed on your podcast player. Turn up to 1.5 speed, and you can get through the podcast, hey, a lot quicker than what you would normally. So I do apologize for the length, but obviously there must have been a lot to talk about, or else I just love hearing the sound of my own voice in these headphones. You work out which one it is. The first game of the night is the Portland Trailblazers and the Houston Rockets, an early game. Well, at least if you live in Houston, it's an early game for everyone, though. It's a bit of an odd time here. The Rockets are favored by 5. The total is 218. Terrence Jones is out after that car accident. He has a concussion from it. Montrezl Harrell is back playing. He missed the last game with an illness. And Noah Vonleh is now questionable for the Blazers. But his absence meant nothing, really, for DFS, because they took him out. They played Mo Harkless. His minutes had changed nothing else with the rotation. And that's it. Let's look at the point guards in this one. Dame Lillard is at 8,900. Great, a pretty good situation going up against the Rockets. He, at one stage, was really inconsistent with what he's doing. He's tightened that up a bit. His lowest score in his last 5 is 35. At 8,900, it's a pretty high salary, but I do like Lillard in this one. Pat Beverley, he's been putting up consistent numbers too. He's priced under 5,000. He's basically giving you 25 a night comfortably. He's averaging 26 across the last 3. I'm okay with using Beverley. I'm okay with using Lillard as well. I think both of them have got pretty nice value in this game. For the shooting guards, CJ McCollum's at 7,500. Hasn't quite been at that right level. He's had a couple of big games, but there's a little bit of risk involved. Now, you're playing him against Harden, not a great defender, obviously. So there is something to be said for using him. And I think he is one of the better mid-range value shooting guard plays, but the consistency hasn't quite been there. Jim Harden's at 10,800. It's a very big salary. Can he get 55 points? He's averaging 54 across the last 3. He had a lower game in the last one with Dwight back. So Dwight being back does reduce his usage somewhat. I don't reckon I'm going to spend 10,800 on James Harden in this game. Another guy you sort of can have a look at is Alan Craver, who's at 4,300. He put up 24 in the last game. I probably won't look at him, but the matchup-wise, it looks nice for him. And he's an okay tournament option, not a great one. The thing about Alan Craver is that even Gerald Henderson is actually averaging more than him across the last five, and it's $300 cheaper. I'm not advocating to go and use Gerald Henderson, but he's someone that you can, you know, maybe use to measure against the effectiveness that Crab might have. Small forward players, Trevor Ariza is at 6,000. He's been putting up pretty solid numbers. Don't hate the matchup here. He's as good as anyone for a cash game cheap option there. And Corey Brewer at 4,000 broke out in the last game for 31.5 points. Not all that confident in him doing that, so he's not someone that I'm, you know, all that high on. Whereas Al-Farouq Aminu, he's got a Rockets bump happening here. Now, he hasn't been great lately. 22-point average across the last five is not ideal, but he has had a 37-point game. He's got a $5,000 price tag. He might be worth using if you really believe this Rocket bump is going to allow him to put up bigger numbers, get some more steals from errant passes, grab some rebounds, hit some open threes, which is something he can do. The power forwards in this one, obviously Terrence Jones is out, so we're going to see more of Josh Smith. He's at 4,200. He wasn't great in the last game. I think his ownership should be relatively low. He could be a guy that could go for 30 points. He's had a 28-point game in the last five. He's at 42. He's definitely someone to have a look at. Clint Capella, I'm not going to be using. On the Blazers side of things, Ed Davis, he's at 4,000. Is the Rockets bump that good to get Ed Davis over the line? I'm not convinced. Where I am convinced is well, not quite convinced, but I'd throw Myers Leonard into a tournament. He's at $4,000. He could get hot. Mason Plumlee at 5,500. Again, love the matchup, but his minutes have been restricted significantly. The last three games, Leonard's played 28, Plumlee's played 20. That's not the right distribution to get Plumlee involved. Dwight Howard at 7,700 hasn't come anywhere close to really to beating that sort of number. The Blazers have been shutting down opposition's centers pretty well lately. I don't reckon I would have much exposure to Dwight Howard, given the way that he's played lately. Look, he could go out and put up a 70-point game. He's done that in the last few weeks, but I'm just not all that thrilled with using him. The Detroit Pistons and the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers are favored by 3.5, and the total is 204.5 points in this one. The point guards, I'm trying to change the format up of the DFS section here as well, so let me know if you prefer it as I go game by game and then position by position. Do you prefer it that way, or do you prefer me just talking about value plays? I think that probably this way it's a little bit easier, but let me know your thoughts. Anyway, the point guards in this game, Reggie Jackson's price at 6,900. I think that he's a nice, solid play. George Hill's defense has dropped a little bit, and all the way he's been restricting players' stats has dropped a little bit. Jackson's averaging over 30 across the last three. He's at 6,900. He feels like he hasn't had a big game in a while, and I think a big one could be coming, especially if Jan Mihinmi's out and he can throw some more of those lobs to Drummond and he can get into the paint a little bit easier. I like Jackson at that price. George Hill at 5,900 is probably not a guy that I'm too keen on using, so I'll steer clear of him. And obviously, Brandon Jennings is only a tournament option. His price at 3,700 makes him mildly tournament appealing, but I probably wouldn't use him. Shooting guards, Monte Ellis, 6,800. He's giving you 21 points over the last three. He's really dropped off after that hot streak, and that was to be expected. Now, the defense that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope brings, it's not going to be here, so that is a factor. So maybe Monte gets some extra run, but I'm still not all that keen on using him. Obviously, for the Pacers, there's no Rod Stuckey in this one either, which would have been a revenge game situation, and Caldwell-Pope's clearly out for the Pistons, as we mentioned earlier. At small forward, there is a great option here, and his name is Stan Johnson. He put up 44 in the last game. Stan Van Gundy was raving about him. He played 44 minutes. I don't have him projected at 44 minutes, but I think he's going to get big run. He's priced at 4,600. I think if you're in a cash game, you have to use Stanley Johnson. If you're in a tournament, I think his ownership's going to be too high, and using him won't be able to get you up to the pointy end of the field. So that might be a spot to get off him, but I reckon he's going to be have massive ownership at that salary. Marcus Morris is at 5,300. He's a solid cash game play at the moment. His last five games, he's got a range from 20 to 27. That's not too bad at 5,300. He's averaging over 25 over the last three games. Yeah, pretty solid production. He's going to have to get some extra run with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope out as well. On the Pacers side of things, Paul George, 8,300. That salary is getting a lot more appealing. He almost had 50 today in that matchup against the Hawks. He averaging 39 across the last three. 8,300. He is up and down, no doubt. And the Pistons defense, including from Marcus Morris, has been really good. I would be hesitant to use George in a cash game. He's always a tournament option, but the stars are not aligning for him in this one. CJ Miles at 3,800. It's always worth a look in a tournament, but nothing about this screams to me big CJ Miles games. But how do we really ever project that? The power forwards, there's some interest in a few guys here. Miles Turner being the main one, 5,600 for Turner. The salary is creeping up, definitely, and I think still a lot of people are going to use him in cash games, and that's fine, but in tournaments may not be the best guy to look at. But still, a 27-point average across the last three is nothing to sneeze at. He's 28 over the last five, just really solid at 5,600. You feel like you're going to get 5X from him basically every night, and he does have the ability to go bigger. The 36 is his highest score in the last five. He could get 40. There's quite a bit to like about Miles Turner. I hate Ersan Ilyasova in this one. Not a good matchup. 5,200, too expensive. And Lavoie Allen, who's been pretty good lately. He's at 3,900. He's averaging 22. He's not a terrible guy to look at, except that the Pistons do shut down opposition power forwards with relatively high success. But if he plays more center, Allen, the Pistons are giving up big numbers to centers. I don't mind using Lavoie Allen at 3,900 in a tournament. Yeah, you know, if you look at ownership between Turner and Allen, I reckon Turner's going to have much higher ownership. Although Allen had a pretty good game today, but I'm not sure many people will buy into it. Allen could be a guy to pivot off and use in a tournament. The centers in this one, Drummond is at 8,500. He's been good, but he hasn't quite been 8,500 good. Not a terrible play. His lowest score in the last five is 30 points, which is pretty decent at 8,500, but just not quite giving me enough. Jan Mahimi doesn't look like if Mahimi plays, it changes a few things. It obviously takes Allen out of the equation. Not sure that he is going to play at this point. And Jordan Hill, 4,600, has really stunk the last probably three games. Not really on my radar here, except, again, a tournament, maybe you'd have a look at him, because the Pistons, big men against the Pistons have been able to put up, or not big men, centers in particular, have been able to put up pretty good numbers. The next game, the Washington Wizards and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets are favored by 4.5. The total is 209. Now, we do not know if Bradley Beal is going to play. They said that his status is still up in the air, given it's a back-to-back. He might not be in. Chris Humphries is questionable. Nene is questionable also. So that's going to mean more run for Jared Dudley. He is someone to look at. We'll talk about him when we get to his position. The point guards. Johnny Wall has been on fire. He is at 9,900 here. This matchup is superb. He's averaging 50 across the last three, 50 across the last five. His lowest score in the last five is 37.8. There is going to be a dud coming. The Hornets are a good matchup for point guards. They are allowing an extra amount of points and assists in particular. This could be a huge night for John Wall. This could be a 15-16 assist night based on what we're looking at projection-wise. I think that at 9,900, he is definitely worth a look. Kemba Walker as well, 8,400. Yeah, I don't mind Kemba. His production has been a little bit down, but he came back pretty strong today. 37 points in 36 minutes. At 8,400, it's not quite where it needs to be. If I'm picking one of those two, I'm picking Johnny Wall. The shooting guard matchup, Brad Beal, obviously, I wouldn't be using him, but with his status up in the air, that's clearly I'm not using him. Garrett Temple would obviously get back into the starting lineup and play some extra run, but he is strictly a tournament option. He's five-game min max. His highest score in five games, 32.5. His lowest score, 8.5. And that was still in 30 minutes, and that was today's game. He's very, very streaky. Jeremy Lin, we're not trusting him at the moment, given the minutes reduction in the last game. And Jeremy Lamb, Gary Neal, none of these guys really float my boat at all. The small forwards, a couple of options here. Obviously, there's two starters on each team, but Nick Batum is at 6,000. He smashed his value in today's game, 40.7 points. Otto Porter is a little bit limited. I like Batum a lot here. It doesn't necessarily, it might look like it's chasing points, but I was relatively high on Batum yesterday as well. Otto Porter, 5,300. Love the matchup. Can't trust the minutes. Not going to be using him. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, he's at 5,800. That feels like it's just a little bit high and probably not something that I want to be too invested in. At the power forward spot, Jared Dudley is worth a look at 4,600 if we're going to have Nene and Chris Humphries out. He only put up 25 today, and at 4,600, that's still obviously good value. But he's going to need to make sure those guys are out. 24-point average across the last five is pretty impressive. I think that he's definitely someone to have a look at rostering in cash games. Cody Zeller at 46 hasn't got anything happening since his return. Frank Kaminsky, no thanks. Marvin Williams at 5,700 is definitely someone that I think we have to look at. He's been smashing value lately, averaging 34 across the last three. The matchup looks negative, but it doesn't really scare me. He's getting some extra run. There is a slight risk with Marvin Williams being limited down to 24 minutes, which happened a couple of times in the last four or five, but I do like using Marvin here. The center spot, Marcin Gortat, it all comes down to what Randy Whitman decides to do with his minutes. He put up 41 today in 34 minutes. Even at the lower minutes, he basically is at least a fantasy point per minute. At 6,700 though, that salary is quite high. You need him at 32, 33 points. The average isn't quite there. The matchup's a little bit negative. Not sure that I'm all that excited about using Marcin Gortat, but there is significant upside if he happens to get more minutes. The problem is, do you rely on Randy Whitman to give you those extra minutes? The Brooklyn Nets and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers are favored by 1.5. The total is 203 points. Injury-wise, not much for us to really pay attention to, apart from the obvious long-term ones. Point guard spot, Ish Smith is at 6,700. He should be able to tear them a new, you know what. He is averaging 35 across the last three. This has got 40 points written all over it for Ish Smith. He's at 6,700. Really like using him. And Isaiah Cannon is at 37. He's been playing fantastically well. Big game today, 25 points, a 24 average across the last three. Yes, there's a bit of risk involved with using him, but at 3,700, all you got to give you is 19 points and you've made 5x value. And if he goes bigger than that, you can get 10x value from him very, very easily. I do like using him. Don Sloan, Shane Larkin. Sloan at 4,400 doesn't interest me. Larkin at 41 definitely doesn't interest me. Not much love for the Brooklyn point guards here. The shooting guard spot, Wayne Ellington's at 3,900. The salary's not rising. The production's not really rising. His minimum score, though, over his last five is 16 points. And that might seem, well, that's shit. But he's at 3,900. That's like a minimum score of almost, I'll say, 4.5x. It's pretty good as a minimum score. Yes, his highest is only 22. And that's like 5.5x. He's not a bad guy. Oh, I've got a lot of big name players in. I need a cheap shooting guard. Hey, let's put Wayne Ellington in at sub 4,000. Joe Johnson at 5,300. The matchup is fantastic. He has destroyed the Sixers plenty of times in the past with the Nets. He dropped a 50 burger today. He's at 5,300. I'm all for using Joe Johnson. I think a lot of people will be all for using Joe Johnson. He's going to be not a tournament option. He's going to be more of a cash game play. But still, I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty confident with him being able to produce over 25 fantasy points in this one. Nick Stauskas, the minutes have been there. The production's been looking okay, but it doesn't translate well to DFS. At small forward, Bob Cove, really struggling at the moment. He's only a great matchup, 5,000, great price, but the value hasn't been there for him lately. As I detailed earlier, the last couple of games, not quite as good. This is a superb matchup for him. Don't want to trust it in a cash game, but in a tournament, we know he can go massive. He's already had a 35-point game in the last five. That's 7x value right there. Bojan Bogdanovic was awesome at minimum salary. He's got a pretty handy matchup. He's had a history in the past of once he gets hot, it happens for two or three games. So at 3,500, yeah, for sure. I'm okay with rostering him at that salary. The power forwards, there's a little bit of interest happening with a few of these guys. Thad Young at 6,400, not a bad matchup. Really good performance from him against the Kings. It is a back-to-back for both of these teams, so that's not too much of a factor, but it might reduce some of their output to a degree. I prefer using Thad Young over Nerlens Noel. In this one, his production has been a little bit better, and you're paying 400. Well, not a little bit better, about the same, but you're paying 400 less. Noel is not a great option, and none of the other power forwards really stand out. At the center position, Brook Lopez, 8,900. This looks great for Lopez. It's not one of those situations, or maybe if they're blowing out the Sixers, he gets limited. Lopez is playing basically 37, 38 minutes a night. This is the Nets we're talking about. They're worse than the Sixers. He is going to play big minutes again. This should have 40 points written all over it. He's averaging 47 across his last five. His lowest score is 36. Brook Lopez is one of the better center plays on the board. Jahlil Okafor is not, so I don't think he is someone that I'm going to have much love there for. The Brook Lopez matchup is it's not bad, but I still, I'm not using Jahlil Okafor. I'll leave it at that. The next game, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Tyreke Evans is out, ruled out already, and Kevin Love is questionable with that thigh bruise. So that means we're going to see more Norris Cole at 4,900. He was brutally bad in the last game. He's only averaging 27 points across the last five, which is it's over 5x value. Against the Cavs, I'm not interested in using Norris Cole here. I just don't think that he's... Maybe in a tournament, and you can get a big game out of him, but in a cash game, no thank you. Drew Holiday at 7,000. Kyrie Irving at 7,000. I'm spending the 7,000 on Kyrie. Now, Drew is not a bad play, but I'm definitely spending that extra money to get Kyrie. He's averaging more across the last three. He's averaging more across the last five. His lowest score in the last five is 29.6 versus 13.2. The only thing that Drew has him on is he's got a higher score over the last five, 43 versus 36. But I am using Kyrie over Drew in this matchup. I think 7,000 is a pretty nice price to use Kyrie Irving. The shooting guard position... Bryce DeJohn Jones is at minimum salary. Willis, we know that he's going to be... We don't know he's going to be starting. We know that Tyreke Evans is going to be out, so DeJohn Jones should get the start. He dropped 32 in the last one. At minimum salary, you feel like you're guaranteed at least 20 points for him in this situation. Cash games, tournament plays, I think that he's pretty nice value at that. J.R. Smith at 5,100, he feels like... Yeah, not bad, but not someone I'm really all that intrigued with. And Iman Shumpert at 3,500. Well, if I'm spending 3,500, it's going Bryce DeJohn Jones's way, not Iman Shumpert's way. The small forwards, LeBron James, obviously the big name here. He's at 10,200. That doesn't really scare me. He's averaging 47 across his last five. His lowest score in his last five is 44. He's gone between 44 and 52 in the last five. At 10,000, I'm all over LeBron James here. I think this is just... almost, you know, money in the bank, 45 points. You lock it in, you're getting that. And then you can throw in some other options around him. Cash games, tournaments, it's big for LeBron. Alonzo G, the opposition small forward, he's averaging 4 points across the last three. That's probably enough said about Alonzo G. He went through a nice little stretch, though, of giving us 20 points, but it's not happening anymore. 4,600 for Tristan Thompson. Hasn't been great lately, but we know what the Pelicans can do in terms of boosting opposition power forward numbers. And if Kevin Love is out, I even like Thompson a little bit more. He could be someone to go, you know, go for 27 points. And that's, you know, that's where he's sort of at 4,600. Kevin Love at 7,700. The salary feels a little bit high. Coming off the thigh bruise, could be a smashing. I don't think I want to use Kevin Love. Anthony Davis, 10,400. Averaging over 50 in the last three games. The Cavs have a negative ease ranking, so it's not a great spot for power forwards to go up against, but it's Anthony Davis. I feel pretty confident spending $10,400 on him, whereas I don't feel that confident spending $6,000 on Ryan Anderson. Just hasn't been able to get it going, and this is not a positive matchup for him. Centers, just don't. The next game, the Dallas Mavericks and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are favored by 6 here. The total is 193.5, so that is already looking not appealing from a fantasy point of view. Devin Harris is out for Dallas already, and that's really the only injury we need to have a look at. Point guard-wise, don't love Darren Williams, even though he's at 5,300. His production's been way down. JJ Barea in more of a... Look, you get some extra minutes, Barea, with Harris out, but he only played 17 against the Spurs, but again, hard to read into that. Don't love using him. Mike Conley's at 6,700. Yes, he's been playing fantastically. Great assists, low turnovers, but the minutes haven't been there. The overall production hasn't been fantastic. I reckon I'll leave him out of it. At shooting guard, again, not a huge amount here. Courtney Lee at 4,000. No thank you. Wes Matthews at 4,500. No thank you. Nobody gives me any love at that position. The small forwards, Chandler Parsons, 6,700. His form has dropped off. He's only averaging 24.5 across the last five. Not a good spot defense-wise here either. Don't want to use him. Jeff Green at 5,700. Really smashing it at the moment. Averaging almost 35 across the last five. Minimum score of 26. You feel like he is in play in both formats. It is going to drop off at some point. Chandler Parsons is not the greatest defender, so I'm not too concerned about that. And Matt Barnes is at 4,900. I would much rather spend that extra 800 and put Jeff Green in. And Barnes is not a horrific option. The power forwards, we've got we've got Dirk, who's priced at 7,000. That's too high in this matchup. I don't want him. I don't want Zach Randolph. I don't want any of these power forwards in this matchup. and the centre position. Zaza Pachulia, can he bounce back at 6,300? His production just hasn't quite been at the right level lately. It's a real negative matchup. No thanks. 8,200 for Marc Gasol. His production's been a little bit down, but this looks like a great matchup. I would be a little bit worried about using him, but I'm not overly scared. He's definitely got 40-point upside in this game. I would prefer him at 7,900 under 8,000, so I'm not overly high on recommending to use him, but he is in play. He comes into the pool of players that you have to have a look at. I just don't think it's a great spot. Chicago Bulls and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Jimmy Butler is, I've currently got him ruled as doubtful. I think there's basically no chance that he plays. Nick Pekovic won't play. Kevin Garnett won't play. And Kevin Martin is listed as questionable at the moment, while Pau Gasol is questionable from the Bulls. And I mentioned earlier, we might see the return of Mike Dunleavy. With Butler out, Derrick Rose at 6,200. He feels like a great play. He's already averaging 35.6 across his last five. He's dropped 53 today. Definitely someone to have a look at. Not scared about Ricky Rubio's defense on him either. And speaking of Rubio, 6,900, I love him going up against Rose. He's averaging 31 across the last five. That just feels marginally high. Again, 700 less, I get Derrick Rose. It feels like a no-brainer to me. Still, Rubio has a mild intrigue. At shooting guard, well, we're not going to see Butler. I'm pretty confident in saying that. But Zach LaVine at 4,800. Even if Kevin Martin comes back, I'm less comfortable using him, but I'm still relatively comfortable using him. 4,800 for LaVine. He's definitely worth a look. Etuan Moore at 4,000. He'd be a great tournament option. He dropped a 39 in the game against the Kings. Not so successful today, just 11 points in 31 minutes. Not really want to trust him in cash, but in a tournament, he's definitely worth a look at. Andy Wiggins, we go at 6,800. He's been balling lately. That's sick, but his price is 6,800. And for as good as he's been, he's only averaging 37 across the last three. And at 6,800, that's almost 5x. He's got a real positive matchup here. He's going to be going against Moore or Dunleavy or someone like that. I can't bring myself to do it because I just know that he's going to disappoint me. The small forward battles in this game, there is zero to like. Zero. Shabazz Muhammad maybe looks appealing at 3,600, but then you looked and he's averaged 7 points over the last three games. We will leave that alone. Maybe you want to throw Tayshaun Prince out there. You don't want to throw Tayshaun Prince out there. At power forward, if Pau Gasol is out, Taj Gibson is to be smashed at 5,300. It's not a great matchup, wise against the Timberwolves, but Gibson's been putting in solid numbers. Even if Gasol plays, a 29 average across the last five is definitely playable, so Gibson's in play. Bobby Portis only if Pau Gasol is out. He put up 23.4 points, which at 3,500 is fantastic. But if Gasol's playing, then there is zero relevance in using him. The centers, Karl Anthony Towns, you do not get much of a better matchup than going against the Bulls. He's at 8,500. You feel like 40 points should be something that's on the cards for him. I love Gorgui Dieng as well. He's at 5,600. Super matchup for him there. We're not going to see Garnett. We're not going to see Pekovic. This should be a 30-point outing for Dieng, so he is someone to look at there. Pau Gasol at 87. No, the Timberwolves and Towns in particular have really been able to restrict opposition big men, so that's not a great one for me. The next game, I'm inclined to just skip right over it. The Los Angeles Lakers and the San Antonio Spurs. This could be over very, very quickly. The Spurs are favored by 15. The total is 201. It's the Spurs on a back-to-back, so we could see resting of guys like LaMarcus Aldridge, Tony Parker, David West might sit. Plenty of guys might sit. There is nothing here for me to like. And then we look at the Lakers guys, and they're gonna face off against the Spurs. I'll run through it quickly anyway. Tony Parker, 5,200, no thanks. D'Angelo Russell, 4,800 as a point guard. I'm mildly intrigued, but he hasn't really been giving us anything. And Jordy Clarkson at 5,500. He's going to be playing the two more than likely, and that is not a good spot if you play against the Spurs. Danny Green, 4,200. Definitely fine with throwing him into a tournament. I think that he can exceed that value. John Simmons at 3,500. He played 23 minutes in today's game and only put up 14 points. That's not a great sign. What do you do with Kobe? He's at 6,700. He's been smashing it. Look, literally averaging over 47 points his last three games. Not something I really thought I'd be saying about Kobe Bryant at this point in the season, but that's exactly what's happening. It doesn't get harder than playing against the Spurs when you're a small forward shooting guard. You got Danny Green on you, you got Kawhi Leonard on you. Very hard to use Kobe. really hard. I can't see how I could do it and think, yeah, this is going to be a great spot for him. It's just not. But he surprised me in the last two games. Maybe he does it again. Small forwards, Kawhi Leonard at 7,200. I just don't think he plays enough minutes to get anywhere near that sort of production. Kyle Anderson played 23 minutes today and put up 15 points. He's at 3,500, maybe into a tournament, but really, like, yeah, no thanks. The power forward situation, the Spurs, Aldridge has been great. He's at 7,100, but there's a massive chance that he sits in this one or gets his minutes reduced. He's averaging 42 across the last three games, which is clearly fantastic. And the matchup looks really positive, but the minutes do scare me. Julius Randle, on the other hand, 6,100, just a bit below value, but I don't mind using him. It's not the right spot, though. So I reckon you can find, with 10 games on, you can find a better power forward to use than Julius Randle. And the centers, not even worth talking about, really, unless you want to get funky and throw Bobo Marjanovic into a tournament at minimum salary. He dropped 17 today in 17 minutes. He's had a 25-point game in the last five games. That could work for you, but you're definitely not using him in a cash game situation. The Oklahoma City Thunder, the Golden State Warriors, is a huge game, obviously. The Warriors are favored by 8.5, and the over-under is a ludicrous 232. Festus Ezeli is out. He's out through the All-Star break with that knee issue. It doesn't mean that Andrew Bogut's getting all the minutes, because he's just not. They're going to run Jason Thompson, Maurice Spates, Draymond Green at center, and Bogut's going to play his 18 to 19 minutes. Maybe he plays a couple extra in this one against the Thunder. Doubt it. Point guards. 10,800 for Steph Curry, 11,000 for Russ Westbrook. Curry gets the benefit of going up against Westbrook, and that's a great boon for fantasy value. But Westbrook goes against Curry. Curry's not the greatest defender. Westbrook is averaging 57 points across his last three, 56 across his last five. His lowest score in his last five games, Russell Westbrook, is 46 points. He is $11,000, but I am okay with spending it. Steph Curry, he's a little more risky. He's more of a tournament option. You look at what he's able to do the last five games. Higher score 61, lower score 26. If you converse that with, well, not converse, if you compare that with Westbrook, his minimum score in the last five is 46 and his highest score is 70. $200 more, I'm all for using Russ Westbrook. Now, Curry does get the matchup benefit here, but if I'm spending up for a point guard, and I really think, look, you might even find a way to fit both of them in. I think that's fantastic. But Westbrook is the guy that I'm spending up for here. Watch me be completely wrong as Steph drops 100 with 25 triples. Does that math work out? Yeah, it does. Shooting guards, Dion Waiters, 4,000. Minutes are really enticing. The matchup's terrible. His production's terrible. Leave him out of it. Klay Thompson is at 7,100. Now, you look at the Thunder's ease, and it looks, you know, not good for Klay, but no Andre Robertson means that he gets a bit of a boost there. He's at 7,100. Can he drop 35? I'm okay with that, but he's more of a tournament option given the way that this matchup is playing out. Small forwards, Kevin Durant. Is this his next team? I know that story's been played out a lot. He's at 10,700. He's averaging 51 across the last five games. The matchup is not a difficult one for him. I think that he is a great option to play here as well. He's in a pretty red-hot form. Harry Barnes is not. He's at 4,300. He's a tournament option only, but really he is just giving us basically nothing. And Andre Iguodala at 4,400 is not really in consideration, I don't think. The power forwards, Draymond, 9,200. He's on. He goes on rolls. He's averaging 46 across the last three. But if you look at his last five, 51 is his highest, 15 is the lowest. That makes him a little bit risky. He's more of a tournament guy, maybe not so much of a cash player. He dropped 50 in the last game. He's at 9,200. I think that he's still a really good play, but you have to be a bit more careful with him in cash. Serge Ibaka at 5,900. The salary looks really appealing, but he's barely getting to that value, so I'm not all that keen with using him. And the centers, Steve Adams, he comes in at 4,300. I really like what he's going to be able to do here. He hasn't been playing fantastically well, but the minutes have been there, so I'm just waiting for a big game. He is a tournament option to me, not a cash game. While 5,000 for Enes Kanter, you feel like you're locked in for him to get 22 to 23 points. There is an inherent risk with using him, and the Warriors do shut down big men recently, so there is a bit of a risk there, but I'm not totally against using Enes Kanter. Andrew Bogut, on the other hand, at 4,300, there is pretty much zero chance I'd want anything to do with him. The last game, the Utah Jazz and the Phoenix Suns, this does not look good for Phoenix in this matchup. They're playing the Jazz. The Jazz shut things down. The Jazz are favored by 7, and the total is 192. That is not a good total. But Archie Goodwin's at 5,200. I still think there's value in using Archie Goodwin. He's going to play big minutes. He should give you be able to give you 25 points with relative ease. I like using him here. Not much else really stands out. Trey Burke's still sick. Hal Neto, yeah, the minutes are there, but the production's not really great. You could maybe force yourself into using Neto if you wanted to run, say, Westbrook and Durant and wanted a cheap point guard to go alongside him. But yeah, the way things are running lately, you want normally a more expensive point guard in the lineup. Shooting guards, Rod Hood is at 5,600. We know that wings get a massive boost against the Suns. Rod dropped 31 today. He's a 26 average across the last five. He had one stinker thrown in there, but I'm pretty confident with using him. And I also, Devin Booker is at 5,400. If I'm spending between those two, I'm going with Hood, who's got the much easier matchup rather than Booker taking on the Jazz. Booker has been good, and he looks good on the court, but it doesn't translate into big DFS numbers. At small forward, Gordie Haywood. With everyone back, his salary is still too high. He's averaging 32 across the last three. Only had 21 today. A great matchup, but I'd want it at 7,200 for me really to be interested in using him. Whereas PJ Tucker at 5,000, horrible matchup with him defensive-wise, but he's not a bad tournament option. He does have 30-point upside. The power forwards, Markieff Morris, 5,200 for him. Look, the matchup's terrible. He's been playing really well, so I don't hate using him. I would probably restrict him to a tournament option only, whereas Derek Favors, I would smash at cash and at tournament. 7,300, averaging 36 across his last three. Dropped 43 today. I think he's a great play in both formats, tournament or GPP, or I'm confusing my words, tournament or cash. Mirza Teletovic, 3,600. He's strictly a tournament guy if you think he's going to get hot, but you do not want to play risky power forwards against the Utah Jazz. At center, Rudy Gobert, 7,100. Definitely fine with getting him out there. Tyson Chandler at 46. I would much rather spend 46 on Alex Len, who dropped 36 in the last game. He has mild intrigue, Len, but again, not against Rudy Gobert. It doesn't make me all that excited about using him. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day. Point guard, Isaiah Cannon, 37. Ish Smith, 67. Ross Westbrook, 11,000. At shooting guard, Bryce DeJean Jones, 3,500. Rod Hood, 56. And CJ McCollum, 75. At small forward, Stan Johnson, 46. Nick Batum, 6,000. Kevin Durant, 10,700. Power forwards, Tristan Thompson, 46. Miles Turner, 56. And Draymond Green, 92. And the centers, Steve Adams, 43. Gorgui Dieng, 56. And Brookie Lopez at 8,900. We are done. I do not know why today's podcast went for so long, so I do apologize that it went for extra. Hopefully, you got some extra information out of it. I mentioned a few things during the show for you to tweet at me. Hey, if someone drops Bob Cove, what do you think of the new DFS presentation? What do you think of the new set? And that they're going to be rotating things up on the screen there. Hey, it's not all that exciting, but it's something that's a little bit interesting to the set. Let me know. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Instagram is @RedRock_Bball. And Facebook is Facebook.com/RedRockBasketball. And join in those daily contests that are on there and try and get yourself a victory and a shout out on the podcast. HardwoodProxism.com, where there's some great stuff always going up over there. And of course, Basketball Monster, great, great website, which I am pleased to be associated with. And we do great work over there. Well, the others do great work. I'm a part of it, obviously, but I think we put out a pretty good product, and I hope you guys do enjoy what's happening over at Basketball Monster. Don't forget, leave a review. It'd be awesome if you can do that. If you like the show, spend 5 minutes, leave a review, tell me what you think, and helps the show grow immensely. Emma Sizzle, who is Emerson Brown, who won the jersey. Your jersey is on its way. And Jake Balke, contact me because you will be getting an NBA jersey as well. We are done here, guys. Finally. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.